Welcome back to Mental Status, a podcast created by psychology students for psychology students. We're your hosts, Yash.
And I'm Josh.
Our aim is to demystify the pathway to becoming a psychologist and share with you what we've learned along the way. We would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land in which we plan, write, and record this podcast, the Turrbal and Yuggera peoples. We pay our respects to the elders past, present, and emerging. And we recognise that this has always been a place of teaching, learning, and storytelling.
Today's episode is part two of our Honours Survival Guide, with more of a focus on the thesis component. So as part of Honours, you'll be required to investigate a research question alongside a supervisor and write up what you found as a thesis.
All right, at the end of this episode, we'll also be answering some listener questions. So if you'd like your questions answered on future episodes, follow us on Mental Status Podcast on Instagram. And whilst we're planning and prepping for episodes, we usually post question boxes so you can submit your questions and they'll be answered on the podcast. So thanks to everyone who's provided some questions for this episode. With all that being said, I reckon let's get into the mental status of the week. Josh, okay. You go first.
Well, last week we had a 35-minute mental status section.
Sorry.
So my mental status, I think, would be excited. I'm really close to the end. It's the home stretch. I had my final class on Monday. Woo. I submitted my final assignments. I have one more exam and then the folio. And for people who don't know, the folio is basically a summary of the work you've been doing on your placement. Mm-hmm. So it'll include things like case studies and
logbook.
Yeah, your supervision records and just all the information to show the work that you've been doing. But with that coming towards an end, it's every single thing you tick off is like one less thing you still have to do. Mm. And that list of to do is just getting shorter and shorter. So yeah, that's getting pretty exciting. What about you? What's your mental status?
I've been pretty exhausted, pretty tired. I think a lot of master's students at this point, or any student really, is really quite burnt out at this stage.
A lot of health professionals at this time of the year are pretty burnt out.
And there's been a few things happening where I'm like, I know that I'm tired because these things are happening. So firstly, I broke my laptop. I've been dropping things. I talked to my friends about this. They've been dropping plates. I've been dropping my laptop, so half of it's broken. And I've been, just forgetting things and having lapses in my memory.
And you dropped your coffee the other day as well.
Oh, yeah, I dropped my coffee. I dropped something else and I can't remember. There we go. I don't remember. And this might be too much information, right? But my choice of period product is a menstrual cup. And I, sanitized it and it was, ready to go. And then I took my shower and I came out to put it in, right? And then I couldn't find it. I was like, where is my menstrual cup? I swear to God, I just sanitized it. Where did it go? So I was looking in the bathroom and it was turning over my room trying to find this menstrual cup. And I forgot that I had already put it in. So if that is not a good summary for where I'm at the moment, I don't know what is.
Thank you so much for sharing,
Yash.
That's okay. All right. Should we get into the episode?
Let's do it.
Okay. To start with, maybe we'll do a little bit of a disclaimer that this is all based on our experience of doing an honours thesis. And as well as that, a disclaimer that if you're not doing an honours, we use the catch-all term honours, but if you're doing a grad dip, a lot of this completely relevant to you as well. Mm-hmm. But it's just easier for us to be able to just say that.
Yes.
So yes, take that, keep that in mind, grain of salt with everything we say, but maybe we can begin with a bit of a rundown on what the thesis is.
Yeah. So the thesis is arguably the most daunting part of honours. At a high level, I like to think of it as kind of a big 8 to 10,000 word project that consists of a lot of smaller components. So I like to think of the thesis as three assignments. One, a lit review. Two, your methods and results section. And three, your discussion, with them being around 3,000 words each. You'll be integrating all the skills that you learnt in undergrad, like a lit review, critical analysis, lab reports, all into this thesis.
Yeah, data analysis, everything.
Exactly.
All right. Well, what was your thesis on?
My thesis, okay, I have the title here. It is The Universality of Baby Brain: Cognitive Declines Found in Both Birthing and Non-Birthing Parents Within the First 2 Years of Parenthood. It's a long title.
Yeah.
That was mine. What was yours on?
Okay, I've got mine here. Mine was, can a Facebook-based self-affirmation task buffer the negative effect of social comparison on self-esteem?
Sheesh.
Yeah. So basically it was looking at whether self-affirmation as a construct could negate that sort of negative social comparison when you see someone doing really well and their social media highlights reel, stopping the negative effect where you go like put yourself down below that.
What did you find?
Not much.
Did you have not significant stuff?
Yeah, we had some, like, the manipulation checks showed that, oh, the self-affirmation task. So what we did for that was actually have participants for 5 minutes scroll on their own Facebook profile.
Right.
Because they see their friends, they see the birthdays and events and all the things that make up their life and their whole world. Mm. So that when they suddenly see someone else go, hey, look at the holiday I'm on, you're not suddenly so, oh, what? I'm not on a holiday. Mm. You remember all the other aspects.
Mm.
So we found that that task was self-affirming, like as self-affirming as many of the most renowned self-affirmation tasks.
Mm.
But we didn't find a lot in terms of negating the negative effects. I still think there could have been an effect there.
Yeah.
But there are always some constraints when doing an honors thesis.
Mm.
How many words did your thesis end up coming to?
Mine was about 11,000, I think.
Mm.
What about you?
I think about 10,000.
Yeah. That's around the average, yeah. Do you remember the day when you submitted it?
I do remember the day. I think that there was maybe a 3-day window for me where I was just stressed, even though I'd done most of it.
Mm.
But you just are like, you don't feel like you can submit early. You have to use all of the time because you're like, oh, what if I missed something? And just rereading it and having my parents reread it and having like friends read it or read sections of it. So I feel like I was in a daze from looking at my thesis and then eventually got to a point where I went, it's not changing for the better. It can only go one way from here.
I filmed my submission and my mum wanted to press the submit button. It was really cute. So my mum submitted it for me and it was very anticlimactic. But I don't know, it's nice to look back on.
Actually, yeah, I think from memory that I submitted on like a Monday morning or something like that.
Oh my God. It's like, what do you do for the rest of the week?
Yeah, I think it was maybe a public holiday and it was like a midday Monday. I could be wrong about that, but I remember
ordinary.
I remember thinking like, okay, I will go outside because I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
It was a very weird feeling. It was an adrenaline rush and then just dump immediately after.
I love that. All right. Should we get into the meat of the podcast?
Yes, we got a lot of information to get through, mm-hmm. so it could be pretty thick in terms of our content, so we'll try to get through it pretty quickly, I think.
Mm-hmm. We broke it into steps, and each way that someone does their honors year or thesis year can vary a lot, but this is just how we thought it would make sense to talk about it.
Yeah, so this is definitely not this is how it should be done, because we were struggling to figure out how to break this down.
Because we did it so differently.
Yeah, we did, absolutely. Part of that was our approaches were different, and other parts were that the university requirements were kind of different in terms of what we needed to do by when.
Exactly.
Okay.
But we thought we'd start with step one, figuring out your research question and methods. What was your experience with this?
Well, we left off last episode talking about your supervisory relationship. Mm. So I think this is a really good place to start, because now that you've got that supervisory relationship, you're at the point of going, okay, where are we going from here? What are we going to be doing? What are we going to be working on? So it will depend who your supervisor is. You'll probably get sick of me saying it depends, because that's just the catch-all thing with everything in psychology.
Mm-hmm.
But in my case, I spoke to my supervisor when, these are my general areas of interest. You know, I see you've done social media research. That's really interesting to me. And obviously her coming from that area of the field, she had some ideas already about, there's a possible gap here. Maybe this could be something worth exploring. And I kind of went over some of these suggestions and picked the one which I thought had the most legs.
Mm, very cool. I had something similar where my honors supervisor and her PhD student were looking at like parenthood and the effects on cognition. And so I fit in nicely into that. So I was doing kind of an extension study of what they had already been looking at. So they had a rough idea of what they were looking at, but I just have to craft the actual research question and how to word everything. And because it was during COVID, they wanted to do an online study, whereas before they had done in-person study. So this is an online study, and it was kind of a backup for like the PhD student as well with data in case something went wrong with that in-person stuff during COVID. So they had figured out a lot of the bigger logistics. It was me just doing the wording, figuring out how to make the questionnaire, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So step one, figure out your research question and figure out how you're going to answer it, basically. Step two, as you've got, creating the data collection tools.
Yeah.
So we had a bit of debate over this one, I would say.
Mm.
Unless I'm remembering it wrong, I don't remember having to do this for the ethics approval,
mm-hmm.
but this was, as you've described, part of being able to get the ethics approval to be able to conduct your study.
Yeah.
The board had to be able to see exactly what sort of method measures you're going to be using before they can say, yes, you got the go ahead.
Yeah. So I had to create a lot of data collection tools to then submit. So that included my survey with the demographic questions, my psychometric assessments that I'd be using. So we're using, for example, the Beck Depression Inventory, and then also the cognitive tasks that we were using, which I was using from Inquisit. And yeah, it was about developing that. And also with recruiting participants, we had to come up with emails and explanatory statements and all of these things. So we had to prepare all of those to submit as extra documents as part of the ethics application. And when I was creating the survey, I had to pilot the survey, test it out a few times, pick up any errors, and also use my supervisor's help to workshop some things. So we were recruiting both Australian and American participants, and we ended up doing two different surveys for that. The American participants, you had to ask slightly different questions, like the way that their education system works and like salaries and things like that is all different. So we had to create two different surveys, submit those two different things. So yeah, there's quite a lot to do before submitting ethics.
So would it be fair to say that at this stage, you were basically giving them kind of the bones of exactly what you were going to be conducting?
Yeah.
And you were just creating those pieces
yeah.
before you actually went ahead with the full ethics approval.
Yeah, even down to the emails that I'd be sending to participants.
So, admittedly, yeah, I can remember some very similar things, like the participant information sheets and things like that. So there are lots of pieces involved in the ethics approval, which is, I guess, arguably the very first assignment that you'll be doing for your thesis and getting ahead on that.
So let's jump into the ethics approval.
Okay, step three.
So with every study, you need to submit an ethics application to be reviewed by whatever your ethics board is at your university. And this is to ensure the safety of participants and also just look at the purpose of your research.
Yeah, make sure you're doing it for a good reason and it's not just kind of, it's going to bring value to the general public. Do you remember what level of risk your study was?
I'm pretty sure mine was low risk because it was an online survey, although there were some sensitive questions because we were talking about parenthood and the effect on cognition. There were some questions around like miscarriage and things like that, which we had to put some extra protective measures in place. So for example, in the survey, if someone had clicked that they had a miscarriage, we would put a helpline like straight after for that participant, whereas if they had clicked something else they wouldn't get that helpline. So things like that we had to integrate into the survey as kind of protective measures to show the ethics board we're taking these risks seriously and we're addressing them.
Yeah, and similarly for mine was pretty low risk, online study. I think in a similar way we had a few questions about self-esteem, which we thought, you know, could bring up some sort of feelings. So including things like helplines in the participant information sheets and just things like that.
Yeah. And also when you have your helplines, being critical about which ones you're using. So we were doing parents in general. My honours partner took the fathers and I took the mothers or the birth giving parents. And we had to create different helplines for each kind of project. So my honours partner had like men's helplines and things like that for like men. I think it was like men's show. I forgot. I don't remember. But I had more like mother, birth giving, parent based
support lines. Yeah. And yeah, all of this is basically for part of your, before you can conduct your study, as we said, you have to submit for ethics approval. So getting all of this information in, writing up your research proposal, which is saying, you know, this is the kind of topic I'm looking into and the existing research. This is the resources that I'm going to be using so that they can go, okay, you need to make amendments to this, this, and this. And it's important that you consider the fact that it could be bounced back to you and you have to make changes.
That's a good point.
Because you can't start your data collection, the actual collection aspect, until you've got approval.
Exactly.
So making sure that you're aware of the ethics approval dates, when they will be reviewing them, making sure that you get all your ethics approval in a timely manner so that you're not waiting a long time and then having to make amendments after that.
Yeah.
So I think that that's just important considerations. Having that kind of harsh timeline, finding that out early so that you, from the get-go, are getting ahead and working towards that.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Okay.
All right, step four, introduction.
Okay, well, I don't think that there is actually all that much that we can speak in terms of our tips for this, because you've all probably done similar work to this throughout your undergrad. But essentially, similar to an undergrad assignment, it'll probably be around the 3,000 word mark, so a bit bigger. And yes, it will be that funnel capture, giving the context, looking at the available research, and slowly building towards your research question and your hypotheses. Generally speaking, I think it's good to work with your supervisor to make sure you're going in the right direction. So I can remember submitting a bit of a skeleton, a dot point structure with how I wanted to. And then I got feedback on that so that when I actually started the write-up process, I knew that I was at least going the right way and that I wasn't going to have to go and completely change it once it was written up.
Mm.
Yeah. Do you have any tips for the intro?
My biggest tip was I really, really struggled with the structure of it, right? And that changed completely towards the end. But listening to TED Talks, podcasts, and listening to how other people conceptualized it and explained it really helped me. What about you? Did you have any tips?
Yeah, my tip is probably going to sound, I'm going to sound a bit like a broken record with some of our previous episodes. But I think treat the introduction like it is its own assignment, probably in semester one. So we actually, I think, did have a deadline where we had to have our introduction submitted by. And that was really good because it meant that I could have a point where I had, oh, I want to have my draft of my introduction. And then as we spoke about, having an external tutor who I can go, hey, could you read this? What do you think? Getting feedback on it. So I probably had two or three reviews of my introduction by halfway through the year. So at that point, I felt pretty comfortable that that was not going to need a heap of work as the year progressed. And I could continue on with my method and results and discussion with some confidence that the bulk of that work in the intro has already been done. I'm not going to have to go back and make drastic changes to it. Step five.
Data collection. So this looks different for everyone. I think there's a lot of variation when it comes to data collection.
Yeah.
Some people had pre-collected data that they were just analyzing. Some people had to collect their data in person, so actually be there collecting the data. My study, I still had to kind of push my study out there and get people to do it, but it was online, which gave me a lot more flexibility, so I could be working from home or at night or in front of like the TV or something and just posting stuff to get more participants. And I actually had a pretty hard time recruiting participants. I ended up with around 100.
You had a pretty niche sample, I would have thought.
It was a really niche sample and not a lot of...
That's quite good for that sample. It was
really... I worked really hard to recruit.
Yeah.
I was posting on parent groups like every other day. We made our own social media to recruit people. Like we made an Instagram. We posted kind of psycho ed stuff on there and then also advertised our study. We went on a motherhood podcast and we spoke about the research of baby brain or like the phenomenon. And we also did an in-person presentation to a mother's group to recruit people. So we did a lot of work to get people on board. And we had like two sorry, not two, 20$50 Coles Myer vouchers as well, which wasn't like a huge incentive because it was like a draw to win. But yeah, that's kind of how we did it. How did you do it?
Yeah, I was pretty fortunate in that I didn't have a lot of restrictions on mine, which is why I was quite impressed by yours, because I think we got 190 or so, and of them, quite a few of them had to be filtered out due to some reason or other. The way we did it was using a research participation pool in my uni. So at the uni I go to, some of the first year units have a like 5% credit for participating in research. So there's kind of a first year student pool of research participation. And I just tried to make sure that I could give my study as much time as possible in that participation pool so that I get a bunch of samples. And as well as that, I think we had a small paid survey sort of software, which we used to go, you know, we recruited, I think like 20 participants or something from that for a pretty small incentive.
It's always such an anxiety provoking time because you're like, I don't know if I'm going to have enough people to do any analysis on. But I guess that brings us to step seven, data analysis.
Okay.
This was the most daunting part, I feel, because it was arguably the newest part. So I guess data analysis could involve things like cleaning the data, which means, you know, removing outliers, checking for false inputs. For example, someone might accidentally have a typo and say like age 4, and so you can't really use them because you don't know how old they are. Missing data, applying some like transformations if you have some
violated assumptions and things like that.
And we used RStudio for our data analysis. So we had to write a script that we could put our data sets in and then run that through. I really, really liked using RStudio because it wasn't as annoying as SPSS where you had to like go back and do things again. Because if you have that base script there and you wanted to change your data set for whatever reason, you could do that really easily. It was a more efficient way of doing it. I really enjoyed it.
We could still do that on SPSS.
Really?
Yeah, using the syntax. So anytime that I would like run my data analyses, instead of just pressing OK, I would paste into the syntax. And then I had like a draft or like a final data analysis syntax. I could rerun that study 50 times, changing the data that I was using if I wanted, using the same things.
That's pretty cool.
I was going to kind of contradict you a little bit here. It is really scary. And the reason that it's scary is because
it's new.
If you mess it up, that's what I was going to say. If you mess it up, it is going to influence, you know, your findings and your discussion and all of that. For me, I really liked data analysis. I did quite well in the third year one. I did well in the fourth year one. But it meant that I kind of enjoyed, it was probably my most enjoyable section was doing like the data analysis.
It's quite satisfying, I think.
Yeah, and I guess maybe it's my fear of writing and feeling like I'm a bad writer that I was like, oh, at least with the data analysis, I know when I get it right, it's right. And I've got it all there. So I actually really enjoyed it. And I just wanted to say that because
that's,
I don't know,
nice.
Maybe there'll be someone listening who's like, oh, I was really looking forward to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, some people, it'll vary person to person.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Step eight.
Yeah, let's do it.
Methods and results. Do you want to take this one?
Okay. For me personally, kind of like I've just said, the method and results were two of my favorite sections. And the reason is I felt that as long as I told them what they needed to know as clearly as possible, then I knew I could reap the marks. And that's what I did. So I utilized previous research and sample sections from similar experiments to make sure that I included basically all of the necessary sections and all of the necessary info within each of these. So for the method, that means participants and all the info for that, the sample size and power, the procedure and making sure I gave all necessary detail, detailed description of the measures, the applied experimental design, and I actually even included a data diagnostics and analytics strategies section.
What do you mean by that?
So it's basically going over in a bit more depth why the certain inferential like analyses we used. So I remember one example of that is that I explained how the assumptions were, whether they were violated or checked, what the
final, your data analysis plan kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And like why bootstrapping was used and things like that.
Yeah.
Which to anyone who's in third year, some of these terms might not sound familiar. And the same thing with results. So I figured as long as I'm comprehensive but clear in my descriptive statistics, the manipulation checks, and my inferential statistics, then I knew that I could do quite well. Because from my memory, I'm pretty sure that they were marked fairly evenly across the sections. So I just figured, if I can just perfect this and just give them everything, even if it was, compared to some, a relatively simple design, I've done everything I can to meet the criteria.
Weird, like, tangent question. When you had your raw data, okay, and you've cleaned it, was there any way that you kind of saved it or any method of, so you don't, like, lose your original data? Because there's so many numbers and different things floating around. How did you organize it?
I think I just had multiple different files. So we had like an original data file, and then we had like a clean data file.
Good.
And then we had like a organized data file.
Okay.
And yeah, making sure that was stored somewhere extremely safe.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Backed up.
Backed up. Making sure that, yeah, back up everything. Mm. I'm sure I, you know, in 2023, I don't need to say that.
Mm.
But yeah, just having those multiple versions.
I mean,
to make
I didn't back
life.
Up my laptop and I just broke it. So.
This is a learning moment.
Yes.
Yeah. But anyway, I just wanted to quickly say that this method and results, it will be different for everyone. So keeping that in mind, that the main point of what I'm saying is find out everything you need to know, refine it as much as you can to make it just transparent and clear, and then you give yourself the best chance at maximizing your marks in these sections.
Beautiful. All right. Step 9, discussion.
All right. Well, the discussion is essentially that big final chunk or that big final assignment, as we were referring.
It's like the most intensive, I think, or laborious, because you have to use your brain quite a bit.
Yeah, and it's at the point of the year where your brain is pretty mushy.
It's fried.
Yeah. So I remember the same thing where I got up to discussion and went like, oh, here we go. Yeah, but in fairness, the structure will be pretty similar to what you've done before. It's a big job. It will be a greater level of depth, a greater level of analysis than you've done, but it's going to follow the same sort of structure that your discussion sections have in all of your lab reports. You'll restate your hypotheses. You'll relate your results to these. You'll analyze the overarching findings, explore alternative explanations, how it relates to existing research, like you've discussed in your intro probably, and what conclusions can be inferred from synthesizing this. So it's nothing essentially new.
Mm. You don't need to make, it's an honest thesis. Like, you don't need to make these massive groundbreaking results and claims. Just state what you found.
If anything, that can be more problematic. A couple of things I did, this is kind of a bit of personal insight. I was so worried about it not sounding smart enough. So what I did was, on the one hand, I would, overcomplicate the implications of it and be like, oh, well, this is going to have incredible implications.
Which will mean this and then
And then the world will change. And when you look back and read it, you're like, it's not that deep.
No.
And similarly, I was going to say, for my limitations, I thought, you know, I'll be really critical so that they can't say that I hadn't noticed. And then I just tore myself to shreds in all of my limitations. And we kind of went, wow, this is really making me question why I've run this study at all.
Yeah.
So don't try to overcomplicate it for yourself. Keep it to the point and the main sort of takeaways, I guess.
Yeah. And with mine, so a big part of mine was having an inclusive study. So we referred to parents, instead of mothers and fathers, as birth-giving and non-birth-giving parents. And also some of the non-birth-giving parents were people who would identify as mothers but had kids through surrogacy or whatever, right? I had some pretty big implications, I guess, for why we wanted to do a more inclusive study. And that wasn't really relevant to answering the questions as such. So I focused most of my discussion on just reporting my results and what I could deduce from that. And then at the end, I did have a bit of more exploratory discussion where I had these other theories and alternative explanations. So I was able to be a little bit more creative there, but it was important for me to get like the hard truth first.
Actually, I think that brings up a really good point, which I don't want to go because I know we're going a bit over time already and we have more that we want to discuss. But I had a similar thing because I didn't find the significant results that you'd hope to find. I remember being like, what am I going to write about? But it just meant that we had an opportunity to go, okay, well, what are some possibilities?
Mm.
Why might this? Let's look at this again and try to figure out what could have gone wrong. What theories may explain this?
And yeah, it's actually easier when you get a not, like not a significant
There was
result.
A lot that we could explore because of that to be yeah. like, this is a possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm going to get ahead of the practical tips really quickly. My recommendation for the discussion in particular, and this is one that I'll come back to your research question. Keep your hypothesis in mind, because when you get to this point, you've been so in the thick of your introduction and your method and your results, it's really easy to forget why you're doing this whole thing. And that's the point that you really need to come back to. What is a question you're trying to answer? Because that's really should be guiding what your whole discussion is. So just thought I'd flag that now, because it's one of the sections I think is most important to do this.
And then step 10 is your final touches. Things like acknowledgements, like we acknowledged our dogs.
Yeah, the important things.
The title page, table of contents, abstract, things like that you can do last.
I loved this section. I loved being able to actually... I hate it. It made it pretty...
I know. Just kind of a seed.
After writing the discussion, I was like, this is great.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about some big takeaway tips. I would say put in deadlines for each of the steps. So ethics, data collection, you know, data analysis, and communicate that with your supervisor. Be like, put this in your calendar. I will give this to you on this date. And having those actual deadlines that you've shared with your supervisor who will be expecting something helps you to set yourself up for success. Yeah. And if you're doing it early on, so setting that deadline a little bit earlier than maybe you really have to get it done, it allows you to have plenty of time to go over things and make sure that you've done it to the best of your ability.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is important for everyone, but to my ADHD peers, this one is crucial. On the one hand, yeah, it gives you deadlines to work towards and you can kind of capitalize on that sort of crunch period moments, but it also helps you chunk down the thesis. It's a huge thing. And if you think, oh, I have still got so much of my thesis to do, it'll take a lot of effort to get started. But if you can break that down into, okay, let me just do the ethics. If I can get the ethics done, I'll feel like I'm doing well. My next tip would probably be don't work harder than you need to. And this may sound bad or sound like bad advice, but what I mean is don't overcomplicate things for yourself. Something which I saw quite a lot of is people taking on fascinating but really complex studies. And I wonder if some of those people kind of thought, well, this is very impressive and it will impress, you know, the people marking it. But at the end of the day, I think the reality is that a well written up, simple study can get better marks than a averagely written, but really complex and overwhelming design. Mm. And that's kind of the approach I took. I will openly admit that the study that I did in terms of the methodology and in terms of the results, it was pretty simple. There was nothing overly complicated there. Just to reiterate that other tip that I mentioned before, keep your research question and your hypotheses in mind. That's the whole thing that's guiding your thesis. That should be the thing that you come back to whenever you start to feel a little bit lost. Come back and go, okay, what are we actually doing here? What am I trying to say in this section to help answer this question?
I think that's a great place to leave it for today. Do you think so?
I think so.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to Mental Status, a podcast created by psychology students for psychology students. If you found this episode helpful, we'd really appreciate it if you could follow us on our Instagram at Mental Status Podcast, or if you want to reach out to us, you can through our email, which is mentalstatuspodcast@gmail.com.
Or if you want to leave us a rating, because we're coming up on 200,
I know.
200 Spotify ratings.
Thank you
ratings.
So much.
Yeah, that is unreal. Everyone who's left a rating, just massive thank you.
It helps us a lot. So thank you.
Yeah, it helps us a lot mentally.
Yeah, me right now. It's the only thing keeping me going. But no, thank you everyone for your time, and we hope to see you next time.
All right, thanks guys.
Bye.
Do, 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 do.